Hi, I'm Timothy Gwynn, and I will be presenting to you the work of evaluating social determinants among HBCU communities and how the public health programs at the corresponding HBCUs respond. And this is, this is with some assistance from Dr. Gwynn. All right, I have no relationships to disclose at this time. I promise I'm not trying to sell any of you anything, just trying to give some new insight. All right, so about this project, this is a preamble to a larger scale future research project that we hope to publish once it's done. This is just a copy of my abstract. All right, to give you a broad overview of what I'm about to present to you guys, we're going to go into a broad overview of public health and HBCUs. We're going to talk about non-communicable diseases and social determinants, how public health and HBCUs work synergistically, and then we'll finish off with the conclusion. All right, public health, the good stuff. So I felt that this quote embodied what public health does and a good comparison in a good contrast with medicine. As the community is the patient to public health, as an individual is to a physician. As we all know, public health is the precursor to physician treatment, or more so preventive treatment to disease and social determinants. Public health is unique in the aspect where it focuses mostly on preventive medicine and is broad and encompasses a wide array of areas. And public health has long been felt within the U.S., where the mortality rate has decreased from 1900 to 1940 by 40%. So that gives you a nice little visual of how important public health has impacted the society from then to now. Well, from then to 1940 and as well as now. Just to give a little bit more background on public health as well, I don't know if you all know about John Snow and the water pump in England, but he identified the source of the cholera outbreak in England in the 1800s, and by basically initially doing what public health, what we all do today and what is known to be done by public health professionals today, which is communal engagement. All right, these are some advances that public health has had that are attributable to public health that they have had throughout the years over time. Clean water initiatives, sanitation, emergency preparedness, disaster preparedness, smoking and alcohol awareness, drunk driving, and seatbelt campaigns, click it or ticket type of thing, sport and recreational safety regulations, wear your helmet while you're riding a bike, wear your helmet during football games, etc. All right. Future of public health. With public health, there's still much more work to be done. It's a constant work in progress. There are always things that pop up that we have to be aware of and that we have to take actions towards in order to prevent from happening. And that's where public health steps in. It's very awareness focused, or oriented rather, and tries to inspire change within others. Public health is full of leaders. And with leadership, there's a theory called the productive level of disequilibrium that's used in leadership in order to inspire change of someone. That theory states that you want to make someone uncomfortable to the point where it inspires that change, but you don't want to make them uncomfortable to the point where they actually leave physically, mentally, or emotionally. That getting them in that medium, in that middle portion, gets them to lead towards changing their habits, perhaps of smoking or drinking or anything else that could be detrimental to one's health. And with that comes education, and there are a lot of higher post-secondary education institutions within the nation that help to lead people to along that path to gain knowledge in order to steer clear of those social determinants. But specifically today, we're going to talk about HBCUs and the communities that they serve and how that affects them. According to the White House initiative on HBCUs, at about 2008 when this was published, they said that there were 106 HBCUs in, wait, did I skip a slide? I did. I'm sorry about that. Around 2008, the White House initiative published some information stating that there were 106 HBCUs within the United States. And that is a very small percentage of the total amount of post-secondary institutions within the nation. All right, now we're on the right slide. All right, so since the early 1800s, HBCUs have served African-American communities. They've been a staple within African-American communities and have sought to and accomplished educating a lot of African-Americans and socially disadvantaged individuals. They do not solely serve African-Americans, but they seek to educate everyone. It's not specific solely to African-Americans, but the ones that most utilize HBCUs or seem to most utilize HBCUs are those that are of the African-American population as well as socioeconomically disadvantaged individuals. And HBCUs, ironically, are located within, seem to be located within impoverished communities. All right. So, HBCU community population. HBCUs have been labeled historically and deep-rooted in African-American culture, but they don't only serve that group. And they, like I said earlier, they serve other ethnic and racial groups as well. And they share a similar goal with public health as to try to serve those communities that HBCUs are housed in order to combat the afflictions that those communities seem to have, which are social determinants, such as, you know, smoking, drinking, and so forth. HBCUs and public health programs. All right, there are, per the CEF website as of yesterday, there are only 5 accredited public health programs at HBCUs in the United States. And these are the 5: Florida A&M, Jackson State, Mary Medical College, Morgan State, as well as Morehouse School of Medicine. There is currently no school of public health at any of the HBCUs in the United States as well. Non-communicable diseases and social determinants. I felt that this quote was helped to give you a more deep perspective on how social determinants should be viewed. It's a quote from Dr. Williams. Eliminating disparities in health would save more lives than current advances in medical technology. That just gives an emphasis on how important public health is and how important preventive medicine is. All right, having issues of diabetes, obesity, food deserts, high prevalence of smoking, and on top of natural biological social determinants is a very hard life to manage and can be very stressful. Reading into that, life can be stressful in general, just dealing with your day-to-day, dealing with bills, family, work, friends, etc. But imagine trying to put on top of that a routine of taking your medicine for an affliction that you may have, such as diabetes or cancer or any type of non-communicable disease that you may have to incorporate into your daily life on top of everything that you're dealing with as well. Stress is known to, we all know that stress is a known link to health degradation and can lead to decreased mental and physical health. And another quote from Dr. Williams, stressors in central role areas of an individual's life that affect multiple areas lead to loss of resources, have objective negative impact on the normal activities of the individual, and can cause a lot of change, disruption, or readjustment are likely to be consequential. That quote goes to support why stress is such a negative effect on your body, and incorporated with social determinants, you get a lot of stress in that type of environment when you're surrounded by social determinants, which is why they're so so bad in those communities. This slide helps to show, give you a better visual on the types of things that plague those communities that surround HBCUs in comparison to what a healthy community has. An unhealthy community may be unsafe in daylight, have exposure to toxic air and hazardous waste, not have a lot of parks or areas for physical activity, limited resources, housing, rundown, linked to crime-ridden neighborhoods, convenience and liquor stores, cigarettes and liquor billboards, and not many grocery stores. A healthy community may have, in contrast to that, safe neighborhoods and safe schools, safe walking routes, clean air and environment, well-equipped parks to exercise, and high-quality mixed-income housing, both owned and rented, well-stocked grocery stores offering nutritious foods, often healthy foods. All right, this is a slide taken from presentation given by Dr. Williams, and it helps to further break down the negatives of an unhealthy neighborhood. Municipal service in that type of neighborhood, the municipal services go down, which can include transportation, police, fire, and garbage. Purchasing power of income goes down, poor quality and higher prices, access to medical care goes down, primary care, hospitals, pharmacies, whereas personal property and crime increase, environmental toxins increase, and abandoned buildings and commercial and industrial facilities also increase. This is another slide that helps to show break down the elements of that type of environment again, and also to show what discrimination is linked to. It's associated with an elevated risk of diabetes, substance abuse, breast cancer incidence, uterine myomas, and so forth. And those are the types of things that you find: substance abuse, diabetes, higher level of diabetes in those types of environments. So with decrease, as the previous slide stated before, not a lot of areas for physical activity, unsafe environments, you can't really get that healthy lifestyle that you would essentially need to be a well-rounded, healthy individual in those types of environments. communicable and non-communicable diseases. This is just a short list of those, such as obesity, diabetes, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, chronic respiratory disease, cancers, and cardiovascular disease. Those that are marked with an asterisk are the four main types of non-communicable diseases as listed by the WHO. All right. Diabetes is likely rampant within impoverished neighborhoods and due to food deserts. As diabetes is linked as a result of one's dietary habits, food deserts are defined as by the USDA, urban neighborhoods and rural towns without ready access to fresh, healthy, and affordable foods. And next slide. Right. Oh, okay, I was on the wrong slide again. I'm sorry about that. All right, we'll move forward. All right, public health and health policy. Public health and health policy are harmonious in a sense where one helps to highlight the issue at hand and the other helps to enforce through social policies. In the grand scheme of things, public health is a stronger version of politics is what this quote is essentially stating. But I found it to be very interesting and relevant. Public health and health policy are synergistically woven together, and they have a very harmonious relationship. In order for either to be relevant, they have to seamlessly mirror each other in order to have the greatest impact on a community. All right. Working together, the public health worker is action-oriented. He wants to apply knowledge in the form of organized programs involving many people, yet more, and he realizes that obtaining the participation of these individuals is often not simple or easy and can be extremely frustrating. I'm sure everyone has noticed that trying to get people to move towards a certain lifestyle, move towards new things can't be easy. It's not easy. HBCUs are at an advantage because they are housed in these types of communities and have easier access to the people that you want to reach most and the issues that you want to attack the most. It would be very advantageous to place a lot more public health programs and schools at HBCUs within the U.S. And could be a very... could have a very positive effect on these communities and positive effect on the efforts of public health in totality. But this can only be done through building relationships with said communities and gaining their trust and going out to do communal engagement as said quote before. Schools of public health within HBCU should work actively within their own communities to encourage positive health and promotion. Like I said, that's the best way to attack said issues and social determinants to get the effect that public health has been working towards in totality. Schools and programs should partner with a local organization, FQHCs, local clinicians, and other public health-oriented fields to develop collaborative initiatives specific to community needs. These types of partnerships would help to penetrate trust barriers. All right. Participation is key. And the relationship of HBCU public health programs is consistency as well as participation is key to get these relationships started and to form a positive relationship with these communities to get those results that you're looking for. In conclusion, I want you to take away from this. The takeaway points are that HBCUs and public health share common goals, particularly relating to defeating inequities common among minority populations. There are very few public health programs at HBCUs, and the benefits will far outweigh the cost of establishing and accrediting schools of public health at HBCUs, rather than spending it on advances in medical technology. References and done. Thank you. Thank you for your time.